Welcome to the Traveling Enneagram with Nikki Myers. Over the next hour, Nikki and her guests will take you on a journey of self-discovery and teach you all about your Enneagram type, from your core fears and desires to the motivation for your behavior and beyond. Now, here is your host, Nikki Myers.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Traveling Enneagram. I am your host, Nikki Myers, and I cannot believe it is Thursday already. Just a couple quick things before we jump into this fantastic episode I have today. As I've been mentioning over the last couple of weeks, we've been doing some fun stuff with the workshops that are booked. Last month, I had donations going to mental health charities or organizations, and this month is Pride Month. So to honor that, a portion of all workshop fees booked during the month of June will be donated to an organization that is very near and dear to me, and that is the Trevor Project, an organization working with LGBTQIA plus youth in their darkest times and providing a lot of really much needed resources for them. In case you're curious, my workshops cover everything from effective high-performance team building to leadership development and everything in betwixt. Yes, that is one of my favorite words to use. This is all done through the lens of the Enneagram and personality structure, and this is valid and good for any size business, both profit and nonprofit. So the next logical question then becomes, where can you find me? Well, aside from traipsing about in a forest, hiking with my dogs and husband and chasing bears, we won't get into that, but I may have come across one and may have wanted to hug it. And my husband may have said no, but that's neither here nor there. Go ahead and hop on to puravitacd.com, or you can go to the Google machines and search Pura Vida Coaching and Development. From there, set up a 30-minute chat with me and we'll talk about what your needs are and we'll go from there. And as always, my one-on-one and couple sessions are pay what you can. All right. The moment you've all been waiting for. I'd say drum roll, but I don't have one. So my guest today is Dr. Jerry Wagner, PhD. And let me tell you, my stars, is he an accomplished human being? Let me tell you a little bit about him. He is a clinical psychologist, therapist, supervisor, consultant in private practice, and emeritus faculty member in the Department of Psychology, as well as the Institute of Pastoral Studies at Loyola University in Chicago. He is the author of 9 Lenses of the World, The Enneagram Perspective, and The Enneagram Spectrum of Personality Styles. Go ahead and get your Amazon app queued up, pop those books into your cart, read them. They are phenomenal, and you'll learn a ton about yourself and everything Enneagram. Dr. Wagner created the Wagner Enneagram Personality Style Scales. And for those of you who like acronyms, it is the WEPS. It's a validated Enneagram inventory assessment and a phenomenal tool for learning and understanding your Enneagram type in a truly comprehensive way. I say that because I did mine and holy mackerel hot corn, was it informative. I learned things about myself I didn't know was happening under the hood. So wonderful and way better than a lot of the ones you'll find on the World Wide Web. Jerry has also been researching and teaching the Enneagram for over 40 years and has offered the Enneagram Spectrum Training and Certification Program both nationally and internationally for the last 20 years. This was my introduction to Jerry as I took both of his courses. I loved them so much. I looked forward to class every week. And not only because of his teaching style, you have an absolute blast in class. He is, as you'll see, a hilarious human being. And just a side note, most of us in class legitimately cried when it was all over. Shout out to everybody who was in that class. I know a lot of you are listening today. But Jerry infuses a lot of psychological concepts into his teachings, which for me, I really appreciate that because it lends scientific credibility to the Enneagram. And many other personality assessments today don't have that kind of credo, as all the cool kids are saying. Lastly, Jerry has also been on the board of directors of the International Enneagram Association. He was the co-editor of the Enneagram Journal and was named an honorary founder of the IEA. Hereby and going forward, we will be referring to him as Your Honor. Totally kidding, unless he wants me to. And then, of course, Among so many other things, he was the keynote speaker for a number of global IEA conferences throughout the world. Jerry, I can only hope to accomplish as much as your pinky finger has in this space in my life. Welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being here.
Well, you're welcome. I'm exhausted just listening to all this. My God, you'd think I'd be sick of the Enneagram by now after all of that, but here I am.
Well, it's all incredible stuff, and I'm so honored. Today, if I didn't say, which maybe I didn't, Jerry is a type five, Your Honor is a type five, and we're going to be discussing the type fives today, and I'm super excited. My brother is a type five. I have a couple of very close friends, again, hi, who are listening today, who are type fives. So we are going to do what we should be doing on a show and just jumping right in. How's that sound?
And may I say, you're very blessed to have so many fives in your life.
Most certainly.
You must have done something good in your previous life. So very good.
Although, you know, and we discussed this in class, I sometimes as a type seven can be a little much for my type five friends.
Yes.
All right. So we're going to start by talking about a couple of famous type fives. Jerry, I'm going to read to you what it's like to be a five. And then we are going to pick your brain for the next 50 minutes.
All right.
All right. Here we go. So we have Alfred Hitchcock, Jodie Foster, Stephen King, Jane Goodall, Bill Gates, Amelia Earhart, and not surprisingly, Albert Einstein. Some of those pretty not surprising, right?
Mm-hmm.
We could also add in Dr. Jerry Wagner in there too.
Please.
All right. I'm going to read to you what it's like to be a five. This is from the book for those of you who would like to know. It's called The Road Back to You. Really great book as well. Pop that in your Amazon cart along with Jerry's two books. So I'm going to read through these. You just tell me when I'm done, if they resonate or what your thoughts are. So here we go. All right. I don't always say things out loud, but in my head, I'm pretty sarcastic and cynical. I'm okay if people ask me a few specific questions about myself, but I don't like it when people want too much information. I need time alone. I think thoughts are more reliable than feelings. I need a couple of days to process an experience or know how I feel about something. I trust myself. That means I think about things for a while and then I can make my own decisions. I have to be very careful with my time and energy. I often felt invisible as a child. Sometimes as an adult, I choose to be invisible. Sometimes I think I should be more generous, but it's hard for me. And lastly, in groups, being uninformed makes me feel very uncomfortable. What do you think?
I resemble all that. Yes.
Pretty straight. As a matter of fact, I have a quote. Well, okay, that's a lie. I didn't come up with anything. I found it.
Yes.
And it's from Oliver Wendell Holmes. I don't know him. It's all right.
Yeah, he died.
Oh, you know him?
Well, he died.
Oh,
he died a long time. Yeah. But what do you got?
I love that so much. To be master of any branch of knowledge, you must master those which lie next to it. And thus, to know anything, you must know all.
Perfect.
I think that just sort of like very succinctly puts the type five in this. Well, we don't put people in a box, but.
No, we don't.
All right.
Yeah, so that's great. In a way, because fives like to get the big picture. Mm-hmm. So I would have, if I'm writing something, the introduction would be like about 25 pages because you have to cover everything that's ever been thought, written, discussed about it. And then about two paragraphs on what I, you know, basically wanted to say. But you gotta get the parameters of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I had to read everything about psychology and then philosophy and then theology. And, you know, then I forgot most of it. But anyway, yeah, that's very true.
After being part of your class, I would disagree with you forgetting all of it. That was a really comprehensive and really phenomenal class. It took me, when we were talking about like classical and operant conditioning, back to my psychology days in college. I loved all of it. So I would disagree that you forgot everything.
All right. I take it back.
All right. So we are going to jump in talking a little bit about how the type five comes to be. So talking about the childhood pattern, we'll talk a little bit about some of the intelligences of the five. And then, of course, as you know, we talk about in each of these episodes, the whole purpose is one, to understand yourself a little bit more deeply if you are a type five. And then, of course, if you know a type five, work with a type five, love a type five, and everything in between, it gives you a couple of moments of compassion to really understand, you know, where they're coming from, why they think and feel the way that they do, and give you an additional, I guess, point of context when interacting with other people, which is the beauty of the Enneagram. So with that, let's talk a little bit about how the little type five came to be.
What happened?
Yeah.
Well, I'm an only child, so I, you know, I came by it naturally. As another five said, you know, if my parents ever sent me to my room, it was useless because I was already there. You know, I was thinking about this, and surprisingly, I surprised myself. When I was in grade school, I was actually the leader of a gang. And we always got beat up by the older kids, so it wasn't a very successful gang. Mm-hmm. But I have this was my little eight, I think, was back there. And mm-hmm. So now I'm wondering, what the hell happened to that part of me? edit that word out. So I'm in grade school. I think I kind of took pride in knowing the answers and being kind of a smart kid. I went to a Jesuit high school, which was kind of the egghead school in town. So I liked learning. I still like to learn. Mm.
Yes.
Not surprisingly, you know, given that generation of my five folks, feelings weren't talked about that much. Mm-hmm. It's not that they said, well, don't feel, but, you know, nobody ever asked how I felt. And so I, you know, thinking probably got more of my attention than feeling, which is still the case. I realized this the other day. I said, okay, now trust your gut, trust your feelings, but use your head.
I like
now,
that.
And whenever you say but, that just kind of negates everything in front of it, though. So it basically it comes down to use your head.
Just use your head.
That's right. So I have to remember, underneath my head, I also have a heart, and I also have, at this point, a very big belly, but that also is a source of information.
I love that. I was reading another really great book, too, in The Wisdom of the Enneagram. That it said something about fives being psychologically stuck in the separation phase of childhood. So around 2 to 3 years old, when you learn to operate sort of independently from whoever that nurturing function is.
Uh-huh.
And it said that it felt like the only way to become independent was to make yourself not want nurturing and emotional connection. And so really like cut off feelings and then retreated into the mind. Does that, have you heard that before?
No, but I can't comment on it because I don't remember what I was thinking when I was 2 years old, but
that's fair.
Could well be. It makes some sense. Real quick, I haven't thought about this in a long time. A lot of fives, including me, I didn't learn about this till later in my grade school, that when I was born, I did something, and my mom, I don't know if I tore something up on the way out or what happened, but there was a separation between me and her initially. Mm-hmm. And other fives have said the same thing. Maybe they had to go to an incubator, or so there was right at the very beginning, kind of a separation, and a bonding didn't take place. It's interesting to think about that. So yeah. We fives tend to detach more than attach, but
that is really fascinating. And we've talked about like object relations and attachment theory and all of those things. And I do think there is a lot of connection in that capacity. You know, obviously we only have, you know, 45 minutes to talk about all of this stuff, so we can't get into it. But for anybody who's interested, object relations, attachment theory really does sort of get to the crux of where some of our personality structures come from, and then what our expectations are of people later on in life. So
While we're talking about it, there's the D.W. Winnicott is a psychiatric pediatrician. Apparently his parents were not very wealthy because they couldn't afford to give him a name. So he just went by his initials, D.W. But Winnicott said, this is for all people. How does the false self get started? Well, if the caretaker isn't somehow empathically attuned, then they may not know what the child needs. So then the child's got to either withdraw or figure out, well, how the hell am I going to get my own needs met then, since I can't count on anybody else to meet them? Or if the parent is not there when you need them, then they might be intrusive. So when you want to just be quiet or go on being, as Winnicott said, they might interrupt. And so you either need to accommodate to them, pulling you out of your essence, or withdraw. And I think fives kind of are sensitive to both of those. Well, the world is withholding. I can't get what I want for from Comcast, so maybe I'll go somewhere else. Or the world is intrusive. So if you're an eight, you could just say, you know, get out of my face. Or if you're a five, you just leave the room, you withdraw. Or you stay in the room and you go somewhere in your cave in your head. I think fives are particularly sensitive to either being withheld from or thinking we're going to be withheld from, or it's very sensitive to intrusions. So I think most fives are introverts.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to every five in the world.
Not yet.
So I can't say every five is an introvert. I know some who are extrovert, but introverts, you know, as you were saying, that we like to think to ourselves, talk to ourselves, and also hate intrusions. When I was teaching, I had office hours, you know, and I was always there. And I wonder why students, you know, are coming to see me, until it dawned on me, you know, your door is closed.
Makes sense. Yeah. I have a note here that says, for the five, I won't ask much from you if you don't ask much for me. Mm-hmm. And so non-intrusion, like you said, is sought by the five and kind of as a means of safety and feeling in control and just staying away. It's really fascinating stuff. So then the next piece here comes, you know, we've talked about, we covered the 8, 9, and 1, we covered the 2, 3, and 4, and we talked about the intelligence center being the gut and the heart for those types, and then the aversive emotion or protective emotion being anger and shame. Moving into the 5, 6, and 7, and here we have a totally different intelligence center and aversive emotion.
makes you nervous even to think about it.
Where am I? Exactly. Aversive emotion. So for the 5, 6, and 7, the intelligence center is head. And Jerry, you kind of even like framed it up by saying, I've got a body, I've got a heart, but I think with my head. And so we'll just really briefly talk a little bit about that intelligence center. And then of course that emotion is fear. This shows up very differently for the 5 as it does for the 6, as it does for the 7. So let's talk a little bit about that.
I think, well, you know, as you so head types lead with their head, we go through life head first. Again, it would be interesting to see if you have line up some people. My head is actually in front of my body. My ears should be over my shoulders, should be over my hips, should be over my ankles. No, they're not. My head is out in front of me. I think it's partly reading books. You know, you've got your head in a book. Heart people, they wear their heart on their sleeve. You know, they lead with their heart. Gut people, and again, I'm starting to look like the Buddha, so I'm beginning to lead with my belly, whether I want to or not. Gut people trust their gut reaction first. So what do you, at the end of the day, what do you kind of use as your criterion? It makes sense. You know, it feels right. I just have this gut reaction. So and the fear part, you know, sixes, it's most obvious, their fear, they're afraid of everything. So it's good to have them around because you don't have to worry about anything. They've already worried about it. So that's nice. I think sevens kind of soar ahead of the fear. They you know, either above it or run ahead of it, so the fear doesn't catch up to them. You could address that. Fies, we tend to, I think, kind of compartmentalize the fear. Repress it, shut it out, don't pay too much attention to it. You know, so I was thinking, because you were asked, and it's none of your business, but what are you afraid of? looking foolish is a terrible thing, you know. Fies, because we value, we're supposed to be smart, you know, so you don't want to look foolish. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if someone said, well, didn't you think about that? Then I get very embarrassed. Mm. Or what, you know, aren't you aware of that? Oh God, oh no.
Yeah.
So that's a horrible thing. So what we do, and I talk about this in the training and in my fabulous books, we tend to take those parts of ourselves that we don't like and project them out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So fies who are smart are surrounded by idiots, you know,
Jerry, what does that say about me having nothing?
No offense meant, but you know, yeah.
I'm kidding.
There's a wonderful book called Confederacy of Dunces. Mm-hmm. So sevens would be surrounded by a bunch of deadheads and a bunch of boring, mm-hmm. non-adventurous people. Sixes are any rebel in them, they project out. So they're surrounded mm-hmm. by a bunch of fanatics, you know, and they got to become policemen or something to keep us in line. So we find ourselves surrounded by our shadow. You know, twos mm-hmm. are surrounded by needy people, and ones, they're surrounded by, you know, slackers.
Sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, because it fills in the gaps.
You need to get in touch with the part of yourself that you disidentify with. There's a lot of good stuff there. So, but the fear is, also goes along with what we were saying earlier. I'm afraid to ask for what I want because maybe you won't give it to me. Mm-hmm. So as a good five, I become a loner and I'll do it myself. We tend to be kind of overly independent. And so that's the, you know, like the world is withholding. And then fives, we withhold on our part because there is that kind of, well, I don't have that much energy, so I better hold on to it. Mm. Even though like here, I'm really getting energized, or if I teach, if I'm with somebody, I actually get more energy. Mm-hmm. And yet there is that kind of a deficiency mentality. There's just not enough to go around. It's not an abundance scarcity. Mentality. It's a scarcity mentality. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So it's a false belief. It's a maladaptive belief, but man, it just seems like that's true.
Yeah. Well, and what we learned, you know, from your class and just with the Enneagram, is that, I don't exactly know how I want to frame this up, but like our personalities really can take control and take what is a superpower and pull it into our liability. And that's sort of kind of what you're talking. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we move into the stereotypes, I just wanted to mention that I too lead with my head in front of my body, but mostly mm-hmm. because I'm getting ready to do a cartwheel or a handstand. So,
I see.
That resonated with me a little bit.
I love it.
For different reasons. But yes. All right. So let's talk about a couple stereotypes of the type five. So yes. What do other people think of the five? And remember, for everybody listening, this is thinking about how, you know, it's easy to type people, it's easy to put people in a box, but that's not what all of this is about. It's about personal growth and self-awareness. So what would you say are common stereotypes of the five?
Well, I'm keeping in mind that stereotypes and truisms are also true. Mm-hmm. So very abstract, very intellectual. I think you mentioned in the past, well, we might appear to be aloof mm-hmm. or arrogant. And let me, you know, say right now between my mouth and your ears, both of those are true. But let me explain. Let me mansplain that a little bit. you would like this. I saw this T-shirt. It's in my defense. The moon was full and I was left unsupervised. So let me, in defense of the five, explain this. Now, it might look like we're aloof, but actually we don't know how to do small talk. I don't know how that happened, but we just don't get it. We don't like it. it's like a Jerry Seinfeld series. You know, it's a story about show about nothing. Why are you talking about nothing? And so because we don't know how to do that, we might be quiet or get kind of disdainful. Oh, well, you're just talking about superficial things. Let's talk about Nietzsche here, you know, or Thomas Aquinas, something that no one could care less about. So the aloofness is partly a defense, and so is the arrogance. I mean, the arrogance is, well, Nikki, I've thought about it, so it must be true. And, you know, once you spend some time thinking about what I've said, you'll also realize that what I said is true. Mildly arrogant, you might say, but they're both defensive. You got me thinking about this. So neither one of them is very good at connecting with people. They're very good at distancing. So when you're aloof, you move away from people. When you're arrogant, you move people away from you. So that's that kind of Karen Horney, you know, you either move away from, you move against, or what we got to remember as Fies, you know, why don't you try moving towards and connecting with the person rather than distancing yourself. So on the Enneagram, for those who, like numbers, there's no connection between the five and a two. So we're connected to the eight and to the seven for stress and when we're balanced. But if you make three equilateral triangles, play around with it a little bit, then it's the five is connected to the eight, connected to the two, back to the five. So we got that connection to the two. And that's the kind of the archetypal moving towards, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we need to remember, you know, you've got three options, not just one, move away from. When in doubt, hide out. It's my motto.
I did want to comment, though, when you talk about arrogance, I think, you know, in thinking about defense mechanisms, you know, again, a lot of the things that we do are so subconsciously driven that we don't realize what we're doing, and we certainly don't realize why we're doing it. And I think arrogance from a protective capacity is, you know, if your deepest, darkest fear is about, you know, not having enough information, that arrogance is a way to protect yourself to say, yes, I do have all of that. And that's, you know, I was reading it, but it doesn't mean that it's like super secret information, but all human beings just want to be safe, secure, connected, and feel worthy. And so if that's the deepest component with a five is feeling worthy and being smart, then of course arrogance is going to be a natural component of your personality to protect you, right?
Or we're just making this up as we go along, but arrogant is you arrogate things to yourself. You make things yours as though they were yours. So maybe we're arrogating all knowledge to ourselves. And, you know, there's a bigger intelligence than your small brain, even though it seems like you have a big fat head, but actually there is wisdom beyond you and even the people around you.
Right.
Surprisingly enough, actually are intelligent.
All right. I like that.
Yeah.
Jerry, we have so much to talk about. We have to take a quick break. So for those of you who are listening, hang tight. We will be back in just a few minutes.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Ever wanted to know what makes you, you? Why you think and feel the way you do? And more important, what the motivation for your behavior is? And when you know this about yourself, what do you do with all of it anyhow? Learning about your Enneagram type helps answer these questions and so much more. Listen to The Traveling Enneagram with host Nikki Myers for answers to these questions. Thursdays at 12 p.m. on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Where can you listen to some of the world's top life coaches ready to dish out success tips and entrepreneurial guidance? The Voice America Empowerment Channel will do just that. Whether it's personal growth, building a better business, or inspirational life stories, make it a daily habit to tune into our programs. From weight loss and personal branding to law of attraction and increased happiness, you'll find it every day at VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You're listening to the Traveling Enneagram with Nikki Myers. Got a question about the Enneagram, your type, or that hashtag camper life? Nikki and her guests want to hear from you. Join us on the show at 888-346-9141 for questions around the campfire. That's 888-346-9141. Now back to the show. Here's Nikki.
Welcome back, everybody. I think that that saying about the theory of relativity is so true. 2 minutes goes by so incredibly fast in this space, but if I had my hand on a burner... would be the slowest time of my life. Thank you for being with us, Jerry. Welcome back. We are going to talk about something that I know you love, and that is feelings.
Ah, yes. Yes, indeed.
So as we spent the first half kind of talking a little bit about the type five, how they come to be in connections to our head versus the rest of our body. By the way, when we talk about, you know, these connections to our head or our heart or our body, that is our dominant space with which we go. It doesn't mean that we don't have access to, if for example, the 5, 6, and 7 being from the head center, it doesn't mean we don't have connection to our heart or our gut. It just means that they're less used or not as easily accessible.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. There's a good reason for it, right? So Jerry, from the type five perspective, what does the connection to feelings look like or the expression of emotion?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when you ask a five, what are you feeling? You're going to get a thought. Well, I think this, you know, or I would be sitting here, standing here thinking, well, what would I be feeling at this time since I don't feel anything? Or what did I read in a book about someone who would be in this situation? What would they feel? The defense, it's an old Freudian defense. It's called isolation. And we all do it, but I think fives, you know, we do it well. Hmm. When you have an experience, you push down the feeling and your awareness goes to your thought. That's why when you ask a five, what do you feel? I don't know, because that feeling has been pushed down. Mm-hmm. And so that fives will say, well, the next day is when the feeling comes up, you know, or if you wait around a little bit, maybe an hour later, I'll tell you, oh, I was feeling tired or annoyed or whatever. But you have to wait till the feeling comes back up to the surface. Mm. So I know I remember years ago, my wife and I decided when she was still with us, we're going to come out. At the end of the day, we'll talk about our feelings for the day. So I would come home, you know, with about 2 feelings. She would have about 20. And my 2 feelings I had made up because, you know, I couldn't remember any feelings that I had. But that would be an exercise with buys to kind of just, you know, keep a little journal of your feelings. You know, you won't have to buy a big journal, just a small one. And even worse, then share it with somebody. Yeah, yeah, oh, my God. It's called exposure therapy. Why don't we want to talk about our feelings? Because we might look stupid. We might look foolish.
Yeah.
Or if you want to hide and be anonymous, those feelings are really close to who you are. Mm-hmm. What's important to you, what you value. So you got to play your cards pretty close to your chest, you know, keep those feelings in. Yeah.
Well, and I think, what do you think when I say feelings are not like, they're so open to interpretation, they're not necessarily fact-based. And if you surround yourself with, you know, needing to understand things, knowledge is concrete. Feelings are not. And so if I have knowledge, I know that to be true. If I have feelings, it's sort of that squishy area. Like isn't based. Does that make sense? Like, it's not a factual.
Yeah. I don't know that I would say that. I think I would reverse it. Surprisingly enough, I would say that feelings are probably the most concrete, and thoughts are, you can make up anything.
That's fair.
But like, I know when I'm angry, I know when I'm afraid, I know when I'm sad, like it's there. I'm just kind of hesitant to let you know about it.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
That's me anyway. I don't know about other fives, but it just seems like Mother Nature has built those feelings in to keep us alive.
Right.
So it makes a lot of sense to pay attention to them.
Fair enough. I like that.
Although having said that, I mean, we're both alive and we pay attention to our thoughts more than our feelings.
So I was just going to say.
Apparently that works too.
Yes. Because I come from the same, head center as a seven. And I've said in past episodes, I am very disconnected from feelings with the exception of overwhelming joy and excitement. But some of those other feelings I have taken great effort to push down very far and not even know when they're there, or I've gotten so good at pretending they're not happening that they aren't there. Yeah. All right. So when we talk about that then, and we've kind of discussed this a little bit, but so when we get into this space of not feeling feelings, or, again, as we've spoken with the type five, there's this tendency to retreat into your mind, to detach, to withdraw.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about what that looks like in the five.
Well, it's safer in there. So, you kind of, I don't know. This isn't, there's a thing, a philosopher talks about understanding, how you come to understanding. So you have experience, understanding, judgment. Start with experience, then the mind tries to understand it. And then you make some kind of, I like it, I don't like it. It fits what I learned, it doesn't fit what I learned. I think us fives tend to, our head people, maybe we go to understanding too quickly. Why am I, why am I feeling this? Why am I sensing this? As opposed to, Carl Rogers, sadist that he was, would keep inviting people, go back into your experience. Well, what's your experience? Trust that. And then let the understanding come out of your experience and then make a judgment about that. I wonder if ones maybe go to judgment real quick. Go back to your experience. Keep going back.
Yeah.
As Fritz Perls said, lose your mind and come to your senses. So senses are experience. And then the senses will kind of lead you to the feelings, to lead you to thoughts. But what was your original question?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
It was about withdrawing. Withdrawing. Retreating.
Okay.
Yes.
Or going up, yes, up and away. So you go up into your head, you're up in the penthouse and, you also have a basement. You might want to see what's going on down there. but it's we got more control over it.
Yeah.
And not all the time. Obsessive compulsive. You don't have control over your thoughts, but for the most part, you can kind of direct your thinking, but feelings, man, they kind of take control of you. That's kind of scary. So you got to trust them. Well, what does my gut tell me? What does my heart tell me? What does my head tell me? Listen to all of them. They got good advice.
Most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time. Yeah. That's why you got all three. You got your little inner,
I take my sometimes my little heart center and flick it off my shoulder.
Yeah, I see.
Intentionally. So, all right. So let's talk about some things that, we were talking about good ideas and bad ideas. So, so some things good ideas that you would pass on to a five, and what are some of the not so good things?
Ideas. Yeah. Or the other way of looking about it is, each of the types has some good ideas, like here's a good way to live. Like ones would say, do things really well and take joy in doing something excellently, or twos would say, you make more friends with honey than a gun. Although these days, never mind. Let's not go there. So Fies would say, what would we say? What's a good idea? The truth will set you free. You know, self-knowledge is better than no knowledge, you know. Knowledge is power, they say, but I've never figured out how to use it as power, but some people get the idea. There's an old Quaker saying, don't speak unless you can improve upon silence. I like that.
We actually have a question around that.
Do we now?
We do. We'll get to that in a minute, but that was a good segue. I like that.
Or there's another one. George Eliot said, blessed is the man or woman who, having nothing to say, abstains from giving wordy evidence of the fact.
I like that.
Keep your mouth shut. Or you can't be criticized for something you've never said. Other things. So that's why Fies, we don't talk too much. Just talk in our heads. So what are some bad ideas? The world is not negotiable. That's kind of a bad idea. You know, Comcast says, well, you know, we're going to raise it $50. And so too bad. So now I have to practice being an aide. I call up Comcast and I said, I want to pay another $50. They say, well, okay. Well, how about this? We'll give you a deal. I'm always amazed. Oh, you can actually negotiate.
Yeah.
The other one that I think it's a bad idea, we psychologists would call it a maladaptive schema. But nobody knows what the hell we're talking about when we say that. So it's a bad idea. So if I'm not involved, if I'm left alone, if I know enough, then I'm safe. Bad idea. Or there's, you know, kind of, I'm okay if I don't feel, you're okay if you don't make me feel or ask me questions about feelings, you know. So it's, again, kind of a faulty idea. Like there's, it's not okay to have feelings. And it also, because Fies, we like to see and observe, we're not too keen about being observed. Or being looked at, which is odd. So I was just talking to somebody recently, like, I think everybody wants to be seen. And there's you know, we say, how are you? And somebody V-gates, you know, how are you going? In Africa, the greeting is, I see you. That's really lovely. Nice. And yet there's something about the, you know, if you get paranoid, you don't want to be seen.
Yeah.
Like our sixth neighbor next to us. Or if the seeing is kind of a cold observing, or there's a lot of judgment in the seeing, then we're not too keen about that. So I'd rather be opaque and kind of look at the world through one way mirror. You know, I can see you, but you can't see me. And another bad idea that Fies have is, you know, if you're in a group, people see you. People know you're there, even though you're keeping your mouth shut. You know? Right. You're not invisible. Or another dumb idea is, you know, thinking that we're on the outside of the group.
Oh, yeah.
We're out of it. You can't get out of it. You're in it. You belong.
And you belong, yeah.
So Descartes, don't get me going on this stuff. The philosopher Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. Actually, he really said, I doubt, therefore I am. How do I know that I know anything or anything is true? Well, I doubt everything. Well, wait a minute. I doubt, therefore I must be. I think, therefore I am. There is the terrible, horrible story about the Cartesian was in a bar one time, and it was at closing time. And so the bartender said, you know, would you like another? And the Cartesian said, I think not. And he disappeared. I think, therefore I am. Okay. So the maladaptive, he's here all week, friends. But luckily we're not. To think that you can, so what? How did Descartes, what did he do? He said, let's imagine that you're in a room, close a door, close the windows, close everything up. And how do I know that anything exists? So you remove yourself from the world and then ask the question, what am I sure of? So that's his starting point, typical five starting point, presuming that you're out of it. But maybe the starting point is, you know, you are in the world. This is your whole existential thing. And to think you're not in the world is a delusion. So start by saying, I do belong. I'm in the game. Now, what do I want to do in the game? But we FIs tend to put ourselves outside the game, put ourselves outside the group. Like either I have nothing to contribute or nobody will know what I'm talking about or nobody cares what I have to say. But it's not a good idea to put yourself outside the group. Yeah, because we're not isolated beings.
So with that then, Jerry.
Yes, ma'am.
And then we're going to jump into questions. So if anybody has a question, 1-888-346-9141 to ask Jerry whatever question you want about a five. I just want to know from you, what is the beauty of the type five? How has your type served you? And what do you want everybody to know is the wonder of the five?
Well, I don't know if this is true for all fives, because human beings are perverse. We just screw up theories constantly. So we're unique. And we're also like some types, and we're like everybody, you know, we all have a head, heart, and gut. So I think one of the things about FIs is that we like to learn. The world is not scary. It's not hostile. Well, these days it is both, but it's really kind of interesting world. And you want to learn about it. Oh, what's this all about? So when there were bookstores, I would go to just about every section, look around, see what was there. I don't do that anymore because there are no more bookstores.
Well, in your bookstores.
So there is that kind of openness, I think, that fives have. Oh, that's interesting. Let's talk about that. Let's see what that's all about. I think as introverts, we listen. I mean, it can be a defense, but it's also a nice thing. You create space for other people. I remember, I think it was somebody in the training you were in, or maybe the one before that. He was a five. And he reframed something. He said, instead of withdraw, I redraw.
Oh, I like that.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
So that's more inclusive. That lets everybody in.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing. So I don't know. I think fives, we can be arrogant, but when we're in a good space, we're, I think, gentle. Accepting. As a therapist, I really want people to honor their experience and you're okay. But let's just talk about it. Yeah. Just be curious about what's going on with you, as opposed to, well, that's dumb, or, well, you shouldn't do that. Or, you what? So I think there's that kind of, any type, a healthy type would be that kind of acceptance, you know?
I think for me, I have found in my life that silence is uncomfortable. And so being around fives and I have aligned to five, right? But being around fives allows me to settle into the silence and be okay with it being quiet, with it being calm, with it being truly the opposite of what I present to the world every day. And I think that beauty has been something that has, opened up my eyes, right? And again, for everybody who's listening, then we're going to jump into a couple questions, but for everybody who's listening, we have, you know, the Enneagram is a circle for a reason, right? We have access to all of the types, and it's what we get to bring in with each of those types that, or borrow or learn from. And we all have the capacity to do that. And so, you know, when hearing these things, that's a beautiful thing to pull into yourself and to be committed to learning and understanding things. It's an awesome personality trait. So here we go. You ready?
Do it.
Like I mentioned, you actually already kind of said this. So we have Ryan who wrote, at work, I am constantly being told by my boss that I don't speak up enough in meetings. I live by the phrase, don't speak unless you can improve the silence, and sometimes just need time to process everything that's being said.
Yeah.
The meetings are usually pretty loud and it's generally overwhelming. How can I tell my boss that I don't have the energy?
So I should start by saying, for me, a good meeting is a canceled meeting. So he's asking the wrong person for this. I have tended to overcome in that my not speaking up by talking right away. Say what's on my mind. Mm. Part of it is you don't want to look foolish. Well, you got to wait till everybody else makes fools of themselves and see what they all say, and then you can say something. So it's, you know, it's not very nice on us, our part, to do that. Then at the end, because you've been listening, you can summarize, sum up what everybody has said. But I agree, especially if you're an introvert and you got extrovert talking, there's a lot of energy coming your way. Mm-hmm. So extroverts are talking between their mouth and your ears, or thinking between their mouth and your ears. Introverts are thinking between our ears. Mm-hmm. So in a way, and it is kind of like waiting. Well, the train is going by and I got to wait till it slows down and I can jump on. But the train just never stops to give you a chance to jump on. So you need to be just kind of assertive. Practice being an eight. Moving against, not in a, beat them up, tell them to shut up, but in an assertive way. Well, let me jump in here. So to tell your boss you don't have the energy, you're telling yourself you don't have the energy. So tell yourself you got the energy. Yeah. You're making it up anyway. Might as well make up something useful. Now, the other thing, I remember another guy saying, he wasn't a five, but his motto was, if I don't have anything to add to what was said, don't say anymore. But usually, you know, fives, we got something to say. So need to practice a little exposure therapy and just say it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. We have a caller. We have about a minute. So yeah. So Matthew called. He wanted to ask, how has social media impacted younger fives in 60 seconds or less?
God, I'm an older five. Beat the hell out of me. I think what's his name? Zuckerberg was a five. I mean, Facebook is an archetypal five operation.
Yep.
You got a lot of, communication, but no direct contact. It's perfect. It's all done at a distance. So it probably hasn't helped. It doesn't help attachment, I don't think. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help. It makes you kind of paranoid. Well, what are people thinking of me? And as someone said, you know, once you put yourself out there, man, you're out there in the internet for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. So that's not helpful for a five who wants to be anonymous. So I don't know, either fives need to get off the social media or don't say something that you will regret saying down the road, because once you put it out there, it's there forever.
It's out there. And I would probably say too, take it with a grain of salt, right? Everything you see on the internet is not true and people's lives are not.
What?
Right. I'm sorry. Yep. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but okay. With that, we could talk for another 7 hours.
Really?
Yep. Jerry, where can people find you?
Okay. Even though I'd like to be anonymous, they can find me at enneagramspectrum.com. Where I got my training listed there. They can go to training.enneagramspectrum.com. They can go to WEPSS.com, webs.com, take my test. They can go to Jerome Wagner, PhD, FUD, Jerome Wagner, PhD at gmail.com. And go to Amazon, buy my books. And I'm doing a training October 4th through November 3rd, 2 days a week, 11 to 1. And then part two, January 10 to February 16th.
You want to take these classes, friends.
I'll be appearing in Las Vegas on the weekend of, no, I'm not.
I love it. Well, that about does it for this episode, though I am certainly not ready to wrap up, but we all know good things must come to an end, right, Jerry?
Thanks, Nikki, for inviting me.
My gosh, thank you so much for being here today. It was just exquisite. And to my Enneafam, be present, stay curious, adventure often, and join me next week as we chat about the truly amazing Type 6, the Loyalist. Ta-ta until then.
Thanks for
for listening to the Traveling Enneagram today. Did you discover who you are? Do you still have questions? Then join us on the show next week and continue your journey of self-discovery. Until we talk again, have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in